Thank you for having us.
How long are splits up here? About 50, 60 minutes? Right? You've heard the old joke, the devil made me do it. Right? Well, the devil made me do it. And it's not something you hear just roll off of people's lips today. It's not, you know, it's not a common phrase necessarily. But you hear it, right? The devil made me do it. And it's a thought or a trend or, you know, just that tendency for people to blame something, somebody else. Blame Satan for whatever it was, right? But the reality is that Satan can't make us do anything, right? Satan really can't make you do anything, right? He doesn't force your hand. If you look through the Bible, there are very few examples of Satan actually making somebody do something, right? He possessed Judas. That's sort of the big example that we can think of, where it actually says that Satan entered into Judas Iscariot before he went and betrayed Jesus. Okay, so Satan made him do something. But in general, he doesn't make us do anything. He doesn't get in there and just make you sin, right? He plays on certain tendencies and traits and qualities of human nature. He plays on our weaknesses. And so today we're going to take a look at weaknesses. It's some of our big, general, broad areas of weaknesses and outline how it is that Satan gets in and really plays on those things. Turn over to 1 John 2. This is really our core scripture. First John 2 and verse 16 says, "For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life is not of the Father, but is of the world." We see three big areas outlined here. Gary Petty, in an article from the Good News in 2004, he puts it this way. He says, "The Apostle John, writing near the end of the first century, writes about three human motivations," right? Three human motivations. These are things that we tend toward. The lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. John sees the evil in human beings as rooted in the motivations of self-preservation, fulfillment of the five senses, and this need to feel superior to others. So it's these three motivations, these three tendencies that we have within us. Three desires, really. Now, God made us with desires, so desires aren't inherently evil. So don't think that what we're getting at today is saying it's wrong to want anything, or it's wrong to have desires toward anything, or feel strongly or be passionate about something. God made us with some of those. But when those desires are uncontrolled, when we have an uncontrolled desire, they tend to fall in one of these categories. And that's where Satan can really play on our weaknesses and play on our tendencies. We've got these three areas. Roger Foster, in an article called "Why Do We Sin?" he put it this way. He said, "When Paul said, 'For I know that in me nothing good dwells,' did he mean that every desire of our fleshly bodies is evil? Certainly not. He could have said just as accurately, 'I know that in my flesh dwells nothing that is inherently evil,' because the flesh in and of itself is neutral in regard to sin and righteousness." And this is something the church has taught for a long time, that God made us neutral. Like when God created us, when he created Adam and Eve, he said, "What I've made is good." You know, and so he made us neutral. We have tendencies. We have areas of weakness that when they're uncontrolled, when you have these uncontrolled motivations, that's where Satan can get in and really, you know, take you in another direction, take you in some direction other than where we want to be going. Let's look at our failure scenario that really demonstrates these. Go back to Genesis 3. Genesis 3, 6. Keeping in mind what we read in 1 John. You know the story. Satan came and he tempted Eve and, you know, manipulated some of the things that God said and twisted the truth and did everything he did, and the end result is here, Genesis 3:6. So when the woman saw that the tree was good for food, that it was pleasant to the eyes, and a tree desirable to make one wise, she took of its fruit and ate. Now we think about what John said about the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes and the pride of life. Good for food, that gets to that lust of the flesh. I see this, okay. Got this craving, I want to eat that. It was pleasant to the eyes, the lust of the eyes. Oh, that greed. Well, I want this thing. Got to have that thing. And it was desirable to make one wise. It's that pride of life issue again. And he got in there and worked it. Notice he didn't force feed her. Satan didn't come and say, "Here's an apple, shove it in your mouth." You know that couldn't work. It didn't work, and that's not how he did it. But he appealed to, if you look in verse 1, he says, "Has God indeed said you shall not eat of every tree in the garden?" So he makes this sort of an exclusive thing. Oh, well, there's this tree here, and he's excluded that. Right? Huh. And plays into her greed. And then you notice in verse 5, "God knows that in the day that you eat of it, your eyes will be opened, and you will be like God," playing into her pride. Right? Getting in there and working with that human tendency to just veer into a little bit of pride. And the next thing you know, she's off down that road and she's eating and she gives it to Adam and there's human history for us. It's wrong for us to look back at Adam and Eve and say, "Oh, I wouldn't have made that mistake." Because it's the same three things. It's these same three tendencies that we fall into today. Let's turn over to Jude 11. And this was a very interesting scripture. Much of this was brought out at the feast in a sermon by Mr. David Holliday, where we were. But if you go to the little book of Jude, and you look at verse 11... we're essentially going to look at some case studies of these three traits, of these three weaknesses, right? Jude 11, he says, "Woe to them." He's speaking of false prophets, false teachers. Right? If you look in verse 4, he says, "For certain men have crept in unnoticed." He's talking about certain people who've crept into the church and corrupted the church. And in verse 11, he says, "Woe to them, for they have gone in the way of Cain, have run greedily in the error of Balaam for profit, and perished in the rebellion of Korah." And so, we're gonna look at these, and we're gonna see again, it's these same three areas, these same three big trends of human weakness. Let's turn back to Genesis 4. In Genesis 4, we read the story of Cain, and we know what happened. In the process of time, in verse 3, it says, "In the process of time, it came to pass that Cain brought an offering of the fruit of the ground to the Lord. Abel also brought of the firstborn of his flock and of their fat, and the Lord respected Abel and his offering. But he did not respect Cain and his offering, and Cain was very angry, and his countenance fell." We see here Cain's issue is anger. It's this lust of the flesh. A lot of the times when we talk about lust of the flesh, the instant thing people go to, sex, drugs, alcohol, lust of the flesh, right? But we're gonna look at lust of the flesh as essentially any physical impulse that evades your self-control, right? So it's anything like that. Is it, you know, it's the beautiful women, it's that extra martini, it could be chocolate, it could be, you know, the guy that well, he's offering you something, you know, something that whatever it is, you just can't resist. It could be thrill seeking, you know, you've got to have that impulse for thrill seeking. Could be something like swearing. Right? It's that human impulse that you don't have control over. It could be anger. In Cain's case, it was anger. But it's this human physical impulse, right? This pull of the flesh that we may not have control over. And let's look at what God said to Cain here in verse 6. So the Lord said to Cain, "Why are you angry and why is your countenance fallen? If you do well, will you not be accepted? And if you do not do well, sin lies at the door, and its desire is for you, but you should rule over it." So this lust of the flesh, this anger that Cain had, it needed self-control. And that's essentially the counteraction for this weakness, is that self-control. We need to be self-controlled and have a self-control over that pull of the flesh, whatever that may be. If you look down in verse 23, you'll see that this is really Cain's legacy. It was murder, and again, we know he murdered his brother, and that set the stage for things. But we can read about Cain's descendants. In verse 23, one of Cain's descendants, Lamech, said to his wives, "Hear my voice, listen to my speech, for I have killed a man for wounding me, even a young man for hurting me." This is what Cain passed on. There was this lack of self-control, this weakness that just continued in that lineage, and again into all of humanity, essentially. But it's just a weakness. It's somewhere where Satan can get in and play against some of these tendencies that we have and drive us into sin. You know, lead us sort of into sin. But we have to let it happen. And when we lose control, when whatever that issue is gets in the way, then we find ourselves in sin, failing because of one of the lust of the flesh. So that's our first big area of weakness. Now, you remember Jude 11? He talks about the way of Cain, and he says they've run greedily in the error of Balaam. If you remember the story of Balaam, you go back to the book of Numbers. Balaam was a prophet that apparently had communication with God, but he also was willing to sell his services. And so what happened is Balak, the king of the Moabites, came to Balaam and said, "We need you to come curse the Israelites." And Balaam said, "Well, I've got to pray to God about it, and we'll see." And so he prayed to God, and God said, "You can't do this." And so they came back to him again and said, "All right, well, we'll give you whatever you want. We've got riches and herds, and we'll give you, you know, whatever you need. We just need you to come do this." And so he prayed to God again and said, "God, can I go with these men?" And God said, "Wait, I'll let you know. But if you go, then you have to tell them the words that I put in your mouth." Well, Balaam didn't wait. He just woke up the next morning and off he went, and you know, he knew there were riches. He got maybe this little sort of maybe from God, and he took it as a yes, and he took off. So Balaam was willing to sell himself, to sell essentially a spiritual connection that he felt he had. He was willing to sell that. And, you know, it's just a greed. It's a lust of the eyes. Essentially, that lust of the eyes comes down to desire for gain, for anything. It could be physical, sometimes it's not. It could be, you know, money, it could be toys, it could be fine houses, it could be delicacies, it could be, you know, any of the physical things in life. But it's that greed for something. And it's outward focused, whereas the lust of the flesh is a little more inwardly focused. It's something that stems from within you, that greed is looking out saying, "This is all that I want to have." And Balaam fell into that. Let's go over to 2 Peter. If you go to 2 Peter 2, Peter 2:15, Peter again talking about false teachers. He says, they have forsaken the way and gone astray, following the way of Balaam, the son of Beor, who loved the wages of unrighteousness. Again, he was willing to trade in what he knew was correct. He was willing to compromise on his morality for gain. And that really comes down to that lust of the eyes issue. Lust of the eyes, when you think about it, greed is really what fuels jealousy, what fuels envy. It's that desire for something, desire for more things, desire for relationships with the right people, desire for whatever that fuels our jealousy, that fuels our envy. It's that lust of the eyes that we're just prone to as human beings. It's just part of us. It's part of all of us. Thirdly, in Jude, he talks about them perishing in the rebellion of Korah. And this comes down to the pride of life issue. It comes down to, in Korah's case, the desire for authority. But really, it's that desire for status. It's that desire for recognition from whoever. Desire for honors, for awards, from titles, or some sort of recognition of your noble background or noble birth or the people that you know. And, there's all of these things that we can play on that really are pride of life issues that we give place to, that we allow ourselves to be a part of, that maybe we just sort of nurture them a little bit. And it's really a pride of life issue. And for Korah, it was authority. Let's go back to number 16. Number 16, verse 3. Korah with Dathan and Abiram and a whole multitude of people, of the leaders, really. They come against Moses. And in verse 3, they gathered together against Moses and Aaron and said to them, "You take too much upon yourselves, for all the congregation is holy, every one of them, and the Lord is among them. Why then do you exalt yourselves above the assembly of the Lord?" So here we have somebody saying, look, you think you've got all the power and all the status, but we deserve some of the power and the status too. So we're challenging your authority. And it was a pride of life issue. You look down in verses 9 through 10. Moses is talking back to them, saying, "Is it a small thing to you that the God of Israel has separated you from the congregation of Israel to bring you near to himself?" Because these were the Levites. These were the men who were helping. They had positions of service that God had appointed them to. And he's saying, "Is it a small thing that the God of Israel separated you from the congregation to bring you near to himself, to do the work of the tabernacle of the Lord, and to stand before the congregation to serve them? And that he has brought you near to himself, you and all your brethren, the sons of Levi with you? And are you seeking the priesthood also?" They were challenging Aaron. They were challenging his authority. And Moses calls him out on it and says, look, you're in dangerous territory because you've let your pride get away from you and now you're seeking status and you're seeking authority. And so this was again, it's that pride of life. It's that pride of life issue. Essentially, it comes down to repeating Satan's sin, right? Satan, his sin was challenging God and saying, "I can be like God." And of course, that's the sin that he sold Eve on too. You can be like God. It's playing into that pride issue about being entitled to more power and authority than what you really are. And sometimes we let ourselves go a little bit down that road and have those sorts of issues. So we have those three. The lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the pride of life. Sort of the classic trio, the easy way to remember that is sex, money, and power. Right? That's the common one. That's the easy one. Sex, money, and power. Right? They sort of embody that lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, pride of life. And then you can go from there and you can expand and think about all the other different things that tie into that. But to make it easy to remember, the title of the message today is Sex, Money, and Power. Let's go ahead, though, and take a look at the success scenario. Let's look at the scenario that worked, where Satan came at somebody and attacked with these three issues, and they all failed. And not surprisingly, that's found in Matthew 4, and that was Jesus Christ. Let's go over to Matthew 4. This is Jesus being tempted by Satan. So we see Satan is going to come at Jesus three times. And guess what? It's the same three things. Same three things over and over and over again. Because they work. And they didn't work against Jesus Christ. But in general, they work. And they work against us. They work against society. I mean, in one way or another, in one of these facets, Satan can get you. He can come at you over here. If that one falls, it'll come at you over here. It'll come at you over here. We all have weaknesses, and we all have these tendencies that we can fall into. Jesus Christ, however, did not. So let's take a look. Let's start in verse 3. Now when the tempter came to him, he said, "If you are the Son of God, command that these stones become bread." Now there's a lot of issues going on here. He gives him that little jab, "If you're the Son of God." But the big thing here is, make these stones bread. You've been fasting for 40 days. Make these stones bread. You know you're hungry. You need it. You'd really like that. Make these stones bread. It's within your power. You can even do it. Make these stones bread and eat. And Jesus Christ said to him, "You know, it is written, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God." And so he resisted him on that front. He said, "No, I'm not falling into that trap." But again, it's the lust of the flesh issue. Satan came at him from this lust of the flesh issue. So he said, "All right, let's come at him from a different angle." Let's skip down to verse 8. It says, "Again, the devil took him up on an exceedingly high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and their glory. And he said to him, 'All these things I will give you if you will fall down and worship me.'" And he had the power to do that. And so he's playing into this lust of the eyes issue, this greed issue. You know, "I will give you all of this. You can have all of this. This is yours." Right? And of course, Jesus Christ, I'm sure he wants, at that point, wanted to be able to help the whole world. But then wasn't the time, and certainly not under those circumstances. And so he comes back to him and he says, "Away with you, Satan, for it is written, you shall worship the Lord your God, and him only you shall serve." And so he resisted that greed issue. It was a lust of the eyes. It was a, let's try and play into his greed here. And it failed. Let's go back a few verses. And again, this plays into that pride of life issue. Let's go to verse 5. "Then the devil took him up into the holy city and set him on the pinnacle of the temple and said to him, 'If you are the Son of God, throw yourself down. For it is written, he shall give his angels charge over you, and in their hands they shall bear you up, lest you dash your foot against a stone.'" He says, "Look, if you're really the Son of God, prove it. Because they'll save you, right? They're not going to let you die. You can't die here like this, right? So prove it, right? Are you really who you say you are? Do you really have that authority? Show me." You know? Playing at his pride. Again, playing at trying to get some sort of reaction out of him, stemming from that need for recognition, for status, for, you know, playing into pride. And he said to him, "It is written again, you should not tempt the Lord your God." Of course, he didn't fall into any of those traps. He was able to overcome those temptations that Satan laid out there in front of him. And the point here is just, he's got these three areas that he attacks, right? They're very broad. And sin will fall into one of these three areas, maybe multiple areas here. But one way or another, you can really look at most sin and lump them under one of these things. One of these three areas and say, "Yeah, that's a pride thing. That's a lust of the flesh thing. That's a lust of the eyes, greed thing." And you can fit them into one of these and say, "Yeah, I see where that is." What these really give us then is sort of a framework for self-examination. They give us a place to start when we sit and we say, okay, what's going on here? You know, which type of weaknesses am I most prone to? When you sit and you look at the things that challenge you, if you're doing the self-examination, you've got these three things now. You can say, where do most of my challenges fall? Am I sort of do I have these pride of life issues? Do I have these lust of the flesh issues? Do I have these lust of the eyes issues? You know, in general, you'll probably find that you have them in all the areas, but there might be one that really stands out. That is really, you know, it's your dominant area. You know, Satan's going to attack you there again and again and again and again because he knows you're weak in that area. And you know, it's common. It's common for us to have these things. It's not, you know, we're not up here saying, oh well, none of us have these and let's brush that under the rug. We do. We have these weaknesses and we have these tendencies. The other thing to look at when we're talking about self-examination, when we're looking at these three areas, is to maybe look at some of the challenges we're facing and say, all right, which side of the action am I on? And I'll explain what I mean by that. Sometimes we are facing challenges because we've already acted on one of these areas, right? We've acted on something, we've fallen into a pride of life issue, a lust of the flesh issue, a lust of the eyes issue. And now we're on the other side of that, dealing with the consequences, right? And that's common. We do that. We all do that because we all fall into sin. And so it helps from the sense of having these areas to be able to identify weakness. It helps us really identify where we broke down and be able to repent specifically in a meaningful way, to be able to say, I see that I have this pride issue. I see that I have, you know, this issue here, that issue here. Post-action, after the action, it gives us a way to say, I see, and I understand how I need to change. On the other hand, sometimes we're pre-action, right? Sometimes we're facing a challenge, or maybe it's an opportunity, where we're looking at something and going to make a decision on it, going to act on it, not quite sure how we're going to act on it, you know, but you can identify that, all right, you know, I might be making this decision because lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, pride of life issue. You can look at some of these challenges that you might be facing and be able to identify where there's potential for you to slip and fall, you know, if you go down a certain road. And so it's helpful in that sense for us to be able to identify those things, to be able to pick them out. Say, I got it. I'm not going to go that road because I know my tendencies and that one's not going to be healthy for me. So it just gives us a proper framework for some of this analysis. Now let's go over to Galatians 5 to wrap up. Galatians 5 and verse 16, Paul simply says, I say then, walk in the Spirit, and you shall not fulfill the lust of the flesh. And he specifically identifies the lust of the flesh here. But the principle stands. You walk in the Spirit, and you're not going to fall into these human weaknesses and these human tendencies. God's Spirit, it prompts us. You know, it's that thing in your conscience that's maybe alerting you a little more than what you would normally have. It says, not quite right. And usually, you know, God's Spirit doesn't, again, it's like Satan. God's Spirit doesn't just take you by the hand and drag you down the road. You know, it's something that you have to respond to. And when we respond in that right way, and we have that little thing that says, no, and we respond in the right way, we're walking in the Spirit, and we're doing that. We're overcoming these human weaknesses and these human tendencies. Again, quoting Mr. Gary Petty from his Good News article, he says, people can undergo behavioral modification, right? People, anybody in the church or out, can change behavior, right? We can all change behavior. We can go in and do whatever we need to do to change some set of behavior. But changing their essential nature, he continues, requires an added spiritual dimension. Changing who we are, changing these three things about us, these big pitfalls that we have, requires an added spiritual dimension. It says only God can change the core of our being. The central message of Jesus Christ is that wayward human beings can be forgiven of their sins and can have their nature changed. And that's really what we're on this earth for, is to be able to live a life and have our nature changed. To have these three weaknesses, ultimately, once we're changed as spirit beings, to no longer be weaknesses. To no longer have these issues and these pulls, but to be able to say, you know, God working in me helped me overcome these things. So let's just be mindful of these three tendencies. Let's be able to identify our personal weaknesses in those contexts, and really to be able to, as Paul admonishes us, to walk in the Spirit.